Been a missionary overseas for a lot of years, and now come with one foot sort of in the mission part of the curriculum, and one foot in the Old Testament part of the curriculum. And Dr. Robbie and Bartel have asked me to take a rotation here, and I'm really pleased to do that. We are looking at texts for Epiphany 6. Might be good to take a minute just to set the kind of theme or some of the overriding emphases of the day, at least the pericopes, a little bit of context for the Old Testament lesson, and then move into the text. Epiphany 6 assigns the epistle reading from 1 Corinthians 2. It's an ongoing series of readings from 1 Corinthians. It's that lovely section that talks about wisdom and what true wisdom is, and contrast wisdom of the world and wisdom with God, and strength and weakness and so on. Specific emphasis for this time, 1 Corinthians 2, 6 to 13, makes reference to wisdom being hidden in God and revealed by the Spirit, and those two seem to be flip sides of the same coin. What Paul is doing, however, is making a specific claim on wisdom, that apart from God there is no wisdom, and he makes a specific identity also of wisdom with the crucified one and with the fact or the offense of crucifixion. The promise is that the Spirit will teach us his wisdom and lead us in that. The gospel lesson, which I just saw Dr. Gibbs walk in, I assume he's the one who will lead you through that, is also part of a continuation. We're moving through the Sermon on the Mount. The section assigned for the sixth Sunday after Epiphany talks about kind of theme sentences that your righteousness must exceed that of the Pharisees, and then goes on to demand the heart as the expression of or the level of righteousness that is looked for, and takes the commands of the Old Testament and the Decalogue among them to a level that maybe they hadn't been taken before. Namely, when you talk murder, when you talk anger, when you talk adultery, when you talk divorce, when you talk oath, God is looking for a righteousness which is not just superficial, and it's not just a checklist of virtues. He's looking for the heart. And the gospel drives righteousness to the same kind of level that St. Paul drives wisdom in the gospel. Teamed up with those two readings, then, is the Old Testament lesson, which is Deuteronomy 30, verses 15 to, 15 to the end, 15 to 20. Context here is that this comes at the end of Deuteronomy and at the end of the Pentateuch. I think maybe the more important part of the context is the fact that it comes at the end of Deuteronomy, that it is kind of last words or last impulse that is made the capstone of the great covenant form that overrides the book of Deuteronomy. And in chapter 28, you have what is the last or the sixth part of the standard covenant formula, the blessings and curses, spelled out in great detail in chapter 28. Chapter 29 describes the renewing of the covenant. Chapter 30 zeroes in on really what is the heart of the covenant relationship. In good Deuteronomic fashion, it makes strong emphasis on the fact that in the covenant relationship, God is looking for the heart and the soul and the mind, and that is what you love God with, and that is what God wants to make a claim on. If you look at chapter at verse 6 of chapter 30, Moses says that the Lord God will circumcise your hearts so that you may and your descendants, so that you may love him with all your heart and soul and mind. The same kind of comprehensive or holistic claim that you have in Paul, in Corinthians, and that you have in Matthew in the Sermon on the Mount. Then the verses follow talk about the implications of that. Verse 11 comes with that lovely section that what Moses is commanding Israel is not too hard. It's not too far away from you. Don't be intimidated by what's here. Yeah, there is no excuse that is relevant. It is in your heart. On that basis then, and kind of as a summary for what you have, comes then the section for assigned for this day, verses 15 through 20. Compared with what you had last week, what we had last week, this is a dream. This is just such smooth sailing. There are no new words. There is no difficult grammar with one or two exceptions. It is really a dream. I thought that because it is such a dream, maybe I would take one little short detour, point out some things that I find helpful in reading the Old Testament text, and we'll try to use them as we go through it. And that is the punctuation that we have in the Masoretic text. Punctuation is important, and it is a real help, not only in chopping up the long verses, but in seeing how the Masoretes, at any rate, put the words or the phrases or the clauses together. If you look at, let's look at verse 15. We won't look at the words first right off. If you look at verse 15, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, sixth word down, Wo'eth Hatova. Do you have that one located? Underneath that is the Athnak, the carrot that points up. That is basically the comma of, the major comma of Hebrew. That there you get one of those per verse. And that is the median, the mark of the middle of the verse, or the middle of the flow of the thought patterns there. So that's always the first thing you look for. Then, between that and the beginning of the verse, or between that and the end of the verse, there may be smaller commas that appear. One of them we have above the fourth word, Hayom. It looks like a Shawa, but it's above the word. Do you see that one? That is a kind of a secondary comma. That's called a zakef. This happens to be a little zakef. And that is because the big zakef also appears. And that has I think we'll find one later on, has a mark alongside of it. It is a shawa, but with kind of a vertical dash next to it. In addition, look directly down, the next line down from Hayom. The next word over is Hayom. Okay, do you see that on the last line? The Hayom in the middle there has above the mem a Shagolta, it is called. It looks like a Shagol, and that's why it's called that. It's just that it's inverted. So it looks a pyramid shape, a right side up pyramid. That is another form of a median comma. And there is one more I want to point out before we get into the text, and that comes in, where did I just see that? I'm not finding it, so we won't worry about it. I'll point it out when we get there. Okay, back to verse 15. From the beginning, we look for the Athnak, and we see we've got about five or six words together there. Re'e, imperative from Ra'ah, to see, behold, kind of a call for attention. Nathati, Lefaneka, Hayom. Take that as the mini group because we've got the Zakef above Hayom. This is a perfect, which really doesn't. And it's certainly not the way most translations translated, and a little bit strange. I have put before you this day, Hayom, have put Most translations make it kind of a present tense with the emphasis on the choosing that we have below. Maybe it's a little bit like the English present perfect or something. I have put before you, which implies that it continues up to the present, you know, what's involved here. But there's a background built in, too. It's not just coming out of the blue. Because of all of the covenant that has gone before. Now, here's the bottom line. I am putting before you. And the perfect is used to provide the link with what goes before. I am putting before your face. Notice also, lefaneka, singular. We're going to see down below a strange flip-flop between singular and plural. Ordinarily, in this kind of context, you'd kind of suspect the plural would be the more appropriate. But we've got the singular here. Deuteronomy does that a lot. I have put before you this day, eth hachayim veeth hatov. And we come to the athnak. We can stop there. Chayim is, in one sense, a superficial sense, the plural of the adjective live. In that sense, it would be living ones. However, this becomes the abstract noun, life itself. It comes in a plural form. I have placed before you this day life and good, or prosperity, if it's used in the sense of material blessings or the providence of God. Ve'eth hamaweth, ve'eth hara. And by contrast, death corresponds to life, and evil corresponds to good. And evil, likewise, can be used not only in a moral sense, but also in the sense of disaster or calamity or counterpart, in that sense, to what we said for Tov. Now, verse 16 starts out strange. Which, Asher? First of all, let's find... have to probably turn the page before we get to the Athnak. Yeah, we sure do. If you turn the next page, we got to wait till we get to the fifth word before we get to the Athnak. So then we look for some mini breaks before that, and we've got the Shigolta down on the fourth word. Asher anoki matzav kahayom, which I. Participle with the pronominal suffix, again, singular. Am commanding you today, this day. Notice the repetition of hayom. All right. Then comes a string that takes us to the first word on the next page. You see a zakef above the first word on the next page. That's our next little subgroup, which I am commanding you this day. To love. This is an infinitive. To love eth Adonai, Eloheka, again a singular, your God. La leketh, from halak, this is the infinitive form, infinitive construct. To walk, bidrakal, in his ways. And the next section, next four words, form a group. Walishmor mitzvotau uchokotau umishpatau. To observe. Shamar is to keep, observe, obey his commands, plural, and his statutes, from chok, plural, and his judgments. All right. We're going to plow on through and then come back and pick up a couple of things. Wachayitha, we've got a verb here. We had the absolute noun before, life. This is the verbal form, you, and you, with the wow in front here, you will live. Waravitha, and you will increase. Uverakka, Adonai Eloheka. Eloheka, you see the Zakif on top. And Yahweh, your God, will bless you. Pronominal suffix. Okay, simple PL for the verb, pronominal suffix. All right, Ba'aretz, next word, in the land. Now, there above is the Zakef Magnum, the big Zakef, heavy-duty Zakef with the extra line on it. So that little phrase was only a one-worder. In the land, with the definite, Asher Ata Vasham Shamma Larishtach, in the land which you are going there, directional, Sham is there, and the ah ending is the directional, to there, to which you are going, Larishtach, to inherit, to possess it. And the it is the Hebrew idiomatic way of tying together the final destination with the asher, the relative pointer. Okay, let's translate the whole thing, and then pick up one or two items that the notes down below provide us to help make sense of it. Which I am commanding you this day, to love Yahweh your God, to walk in his ways, and to observe his commands and his statutes and his judgments, and you will live and you will multiply, and Yahweh your God will bless you in the land into which you are going to possess. The funny thing about this verse is the fact is the initial word, asher. First verse said, behold, I'm giving you today, I'm setting before you today, life and death, life and good, death and evil, which I am commanding you. What do you mean? The which doesn't connect, it doesn't have a referent. It just kind of sits there, all of a sudden it appears. And if you notice the footnote, A, down below, 16, way down at the bottom of that list of notes, it says, now what the Greek has, what the Septuagint has, is, and it has it in Greek here, and then translates it into Hebrew, and before the Hebrew, it's the says INS, insert here, this phrase, that is to say, Wa'im tishma el mitzvot adonai Eloheka, if you obey, or if you listen to the commands of Yahweh your God, asher anoki mitzavaka hayom, which I am commanding you this day, then the which does indeed have a referent. It's got a beginning. It's got something it points back to. In other words, the suggestion is that something clearly has gotten lost here. Otherwise, you wouldn't start out with a word which at the beginning of a verse, because it's not connected with the prior verse at all. Is this the way it really was? You know, is the suggestion right? The most you can point to is that the Septuagint has it this way. And whether it was because it had a fuller text or whether it reconstructed the text, that's a matter for textual critics to deal with. The thing is that to make sense of the text that we have here, and if you look at translations, virtually all of them do this, you got to put this phrase in. All right. Second thing, I'm commanding you this day to love Yahweh your God, to walk in his ways and to observe his commands and so on. If you notice that there is a footnote under to walk, last word of that line, to walk in his ways, and the footnote says, it'd really be a lot smoother here if you'd put a while consecutive in front of that. That is to say, to love the Lord your God and to walk in his ways and to observe his commands. Well, that's one option. If we keep it as it is, then we have a slightly different meaning. To love the Lord your God in order to walk in his ways and to keep his commands. That is to say, you don't have three parallel things, to love, to walk, and to observe. What you're saying is that you love the Lord your God, and that then allows you to, or shows itself in, your walking in his ways and observing his commands. Slight variation, and maybe not theologically all that tremendously overpowering, but it does give a little different flavor as to how these things should be linked. And that has implications for when you press it hard for sanctification and how our response to God lives itself out. All right, on down to verse 17, I think. I don't think there's anything else that I noted here. Wa'im yifne. Sorry, we got to look for punctuation here. And we look for the, where's the Othnak? Othnak is under Tishma, and there is no prior punctuation. Wa'im yifne levavaka. And if it turns, that is, your heart, if your heart turns, and that's the sense is turn away, if your heart turns, walo tishma, and you do not obey, you do not listen, you do not hearken, wa niddachta, there's one of the other commas I was looking for. This is called a rabia, a little kind of a diamond that's up above the tau there. Is another form, fairly common in Hebrew, another comma that you'll see there. And you do not obey, and you go astray. We're dealing with singulars here again. Wahishtachavitha leelohim acherim. Wa'avad tam, end of the verse. That's all one section. And you worship, bow down to other gods. De'elohim acherim. This hishtachavitha is a very strange case in Hebrew grammar. We've got the kal and the nifal and the piel and the pual and the hithpael and hifil, hofal, whatever. This is called a hishtafel of a root chava, the cheth wal he. And it's the only root that I am aware of where you have the occurrence of a hishtafel. It serves like a hithpael. It's a reflexive sense, to bow yourself down, to bow down, to worship. This is the ordinary word that's used for worship in the Old Testament. And you worship other gods, and you serve them. The entire verse is a conditional. Verse 18, Higavti la'kem hayom. That's takes us to the first comma. I have, this is a perfect, pronounced to you this day. I think we in English would probably translate it a present again. I am announcing, I am making this pronouncement today to you. Ki, that. Avoth tovedun, athnak. End of the first half of the sentence. Avoth, infinitive absolute, which gives added emphasis and certainty to the noun that follows the tovedun, to perish. You will indeed, undeniably, inevitably, unavoidably perish. Notice here, tovedun, suddenly a plural jumps out. Up until this point, everything has been singular. Here we have a plural. No reason why it should be a plural. It's not as though we got a shift of audience or listeners or anything. All of a sudden, it's plural. And we'll see down below, it flip-flops a bit. Lotharikun, again, a plural. Yamim, al-ha'adama, there's the comma. You will not make long. This is the hifil of arak. To be long, to make long, that is to lengthen days. You will not lengthen days. You will not have a longevity on the land. Which land? Esher ata over eth yardain. There's the comma. Which? You. Singular. Notice the flip-flop. Which you are crossing over the Jordan, lavo shamma larishtach, to enter there to possess it. Interesting, too, that here the word for land is ha'adamah. Up one, two, three lines above this, it was the word eretz. Seemingly no difference in usage here between them, but different words. All right, on down to 19. 18 says that I am pronouncing to you that you will surely die, you will not have long life on the land into which you are going. Ha'idothi ba'kem hayom eth ha'shamayim wa eth ha'aretz. There's the Shigolta. We'll take it that far. Ha'idothi, hifil, of the verb to witness. I will make witness. I will call to witness. I have, this is perfect, set up as witness. Ba'kem. NIV translates that against you. I'm not sure that the ba'kem really necessarily means against you. I think it could simply mean among you. I have set up among you, like when they crossed the Jordan, they set up the stones to be a witness. Kind of like this, not necessarily accusing at this point. Just among you there is this witness. Hayom. This is already the fourth time that has occurred. The heavens and the earth. Hechayim. Wahamaweth nathati lafaneka. There's the comma. Life and death I have set before you. Emphasis on the subjects there, life and death. They're not really subjects, they're the objects. Life and death I have set before you. Habaraka wahakalala athnak. Blessing and the blessing and the curse. NIV, for whatever reason, translates that plural. I'm not sure what special emphasis that's supposed to have. Up above, when you had life and death, you had good and evil. Here it is life and death, blessing and curse. And maybe that parallelism allows us to identify or to define one with the help of the other. All right, we're now at the real climax of this, all of this long introduction. Uvacharta b'chayim, and you choose. This is an imperative sense. It's a perfect form. Choose you life. Lama'an techye ata v'zareka, in order that you and, this is singular, you and your seed, I'm sorry, in order that you may live, because the verb is singular, that you may live, and also your seed. All right, verse 20. La'ahava eth Adonai Eloheka. 2. Love Adonai your God. Lishmoa b'kolo. U l'davkavo. To listen to his voice and to cleave to him, to cling to him. Ki, hu, chayeka, powerful. Because he is your life. Notice all of the buildup of life and living and so on finally reaches the climax. We're reaching the real high point here. He is your life. And therefore, when he calls on them to choose life, he's really calling on them to choose Yahweh. He is your life. And wa'orek yameka, and he is your length of days. La sheveth al ha'adama. Asher nishba Adonai, ha'adama, there's that rabia above, in order to, so that you may dwell on the land. Asher nishba Adonai, which Yahweh has sworn, la'avotheka, to your fathers, Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, La Thaith Lahem, to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, to give, this is the infinitive of Nathan, to give to them. All right, pretty much straightforward, very, except for the beginning of verse 16, very little textual difficulty at all. A powerful lot to climb into the pulpit with. And you could really take it a lot of different directions, all with pointers from the text. I think the occurrence of Hayom allows a sermon to be preached with a real strong sense of